share it.
So it's on the independent website.
Hello and welcome to Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. Welcome to Mayor Monday. The current mayor, Tony Harp, couldn't make it today, but two of her top staffers, and we'll leave the other suggestions there, who make the city tick are here in her stead. City Engineer Giovanni Zinn and Transit Chief Doug Housladen. Welcome to the studio, guys. So great to see you Monday morning.
Thank you very much. We're excited to be here.
Great to be here, Paul. Thanks so much.
And actually, Doug doesn't get weekends off, I guess, because I know he was working this weekend. But for some of us, we're starting our week. And we also want to let you know that today's program is made possible in part thanks to support from Bertram Moses PC, from Gateway Community College in downtown New Haven. Thanks, Gateway. Thanks, Bertram Moses. And thanks, Giovanni and Doug. So nice to see you.
It's great. It really is great to be here.
So you guys basically make our buildings work right, our streets work right, our bridges not flood. And before I get to the main thing I want to ask you, I want to talk about this weekend. We just had a Grand Prix, the third year, Doug, that we had in downtown New Haven on a Friday. We have thousands of people come to watch, hundreds of cyclists compete for a prize. We have a beats festival, pizza all over. How'd it go?
I'll tell you, I think third year, kudos to the organizers and to emergency operations, PDFD. My crews at TTMP and the Parks Department, you know, everybody did their part. DPW, we had some last minute drama. United Illuminating manhole cover kind of sank on Temple Street about 4 hours before our first race.
Really? But, so what does that mean? When that happens, what does that mean?
Well, I usually call Giovanni and say, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
But what were you worried about was that the bicyclists would all like be racing and then they'd fly in the air and break their heads and everything?
Yeah. So it was a last minute pothole that got developed, but good operations folks, they asked for is that we cleared the way for them, logistically speaking, and they were able to get the roadway back up and running for the race.
So sealed the pothole at the last second with hours. So hours to go. How did you find out about it?
Bruce Fisher interrupted a conference. One of our amazing dedicated city staffers at TTMP who interrupted
Just
us
transit
in
traffic and parking
in our conference that we were hosting and grabbed me and said, Doug, there's a big problem.
Wow.
But it all thanks again to the crews, Layden Industries and United Illuminating. And
so now it takes a while for pothole to dry, doesn't it?
No, you're able to. I mean, you're pretty much able to drive over it pretty quickly. Put the hot mix on, tamp it down, and you're able to open the road
pretty
quickly.
Before it dries, you would make a groove if you drive over it, right?
It's got a set, basically. Yes. So as long as it's set, you're able to drive pretty quickly. Pothole mix is designed for reopening the road pretty quickly.
But I'll tell you, that was only one of three big events this weekend, even four if you're counting other more community. In the downtown, we had Grand Prix Friday night, but also Friday night kicked off Pride weekend.
Oh, right.
Pride Fest. Was at the street closure a little bit on Saturday night on Center Street there. It was well attended and a wonderful event. And then, of course, Sunday morning, we also had the infamous bed race. For its second year back.
Is that the hospital
operation
that does that?
This year, lately it's been the St. Patrick's Day, the Associated Irish Societies of Greater New Haven, doing fundraising for the St. Patrick's Day in New Haven. But Sunday morning I got to see Engine 9 versus Engine 4 compete. Got to see Engine 9 then take on the New Haven Old Blacks rugby team.
Wow.
And Engine 9 seemed to be cruising to a victory. I wonder if they ended up winning.
Giovanni doesn't know.
I don't. I'm sorry.
And what was the fourth event, Doug? You had Pride, you had Grand Prix, you had
there was also an amazing Frederick Douglass event that I did oversleep for, which I feel really terrible, but it looked really great. It did look really great. I was just exhausted after
And that was the old African-American regiment that's memorialized at Griscolo Park, and they had a play actor. Bless his Frederick Douglass. See you here today. What would he say about Charlottesville, et cetera? Back to the Grand Prix. So how many people came?
I haven't seen any estimates myself. I've been upwards of the 10,000 mark.
Wow.
I think for the most important thing for me when I was looking around, walking around with Matthew Emerson, Michael Piscatelli, Giovanni, the number of families that we saw that we knew from our neighborhoods in New Haven really came out. And they all said the same thing. Like, we didn't know about it in time. You got to do a better job of communicating it. But they were there and they had a lot of fun. And it was just wonderful to see a lot of families.
And then how many cyclists?
I think it was a little over 300 cyclists.
And they got prizes.
And they got prizes. What's funny about racing, things that I don't know anything about cycling other than watching the Grand Prix 3 years in a row. They do that, the prime, on each lap, sometimes whoever wins the lap gets like $20. Oh. And so in addition to the $6,000 of prizes and purses or however many thousand, there's also like this $50 here, $50 there for people that win one lap, two laps, stuff like that.
Giovanni, you were about to say something.
Well, I mean, I was walking around there as well, and it's just amazing, you know, what downtown is like without traffic, and instead of having all these bikes whizzing by, and, you know, the bikes are frankly breaking the speed limit all the time, whizzing by, and it's really interesting. You know, I remember the first year I was there, it was the last race of the night is the sort of the highest class, and it's the, you know, where they go really fast, and I was waiting to cross the street at Temple Street, and they came flying by in a pack at probably, you know, close to 40 miles an hour, and it was quite an impressive sight. So it's really a very exciting event that we all look forward to each year.
You know, there are all these events here like Opera Palooza. I mean, every month we got something on New Haven, and it was so much more. One person commented on the Independent that said, you know, well, we used to have the Molson Festival Street Fair. Now we have another thing gone in New Haven. I've been in New Haven close to 40 years. There is no question that there is so much more going on now than ever. I mean, whether it's the flicks, the summer, you know, Arts and Ideas, or the concerts in the Green, or the neighborhood concerts that take place all summer, or the Friday movies. I mean, you can't even keep track of it. And this is one of the new, we've had these new traditions. I think it's fantastic. And people actually love this bike race and street festival. I hear uniformly people love it. Now, when you start something new, you get some grumbling. So the first year that the restaurant said, well, you know, we're losing our afternoon customers. And I didn't hear that since. Did they learn how to fly with it? You encourage them to put tables on the sidewalk. And in fact, you're bringing them 10,000 new people who are going to patronize them?
So we have two events simultaneous. You have the Grand Prix road race, and then you also have the Beats and Eats feast and festival going on, hosted by Colin at Taste of New Haven. And I think every year we're doing a better job of getting more and more owners of those streets, Chapel College and the downtown, to kind of turn their tables, you know, turn them inside out and bring them outside. But, you know, we definitely have not gotten it completely correct yet. We still need more recommendations on how to keep improving. So,
Communication seems to be the next challenge for next year. Like, someone we connect with you asked us to even put it up on our site in advance again, because we did the press conference a few weeks in advance. But I don't think people remember a few weeks in advance what to do this Friday night.
Yeah.
So we threw something up for you. But yeah, I think you do need to, with all this great stuff that goes on in New Haven, and people say, gee, I didn't know about it. There's just too much now. And I think, I think press conferences weeks in advance are fine because they plant the idea, but I think you need that several days before and day of reminder.
No, I think so. We have interestingly, it's an interesting traffic pattern for the Grand Prix. Elm Street is the big magic sauce for why we're able to do the Grand Prix at all. So keeping Elm Street open, but just reduced in the number of lanes is a big deal for everyone involved, especially emergency operations. Kudos to, again, Bruce Fisher and folks over at the police department to figure out how to get that done safely. Friday I was calling a dentist at Crown Towers at 123 York Street just to talk to their staff, to calm them down, to make sure that they knew they would definitely not be impacted. But there are so many, you know, I'm holding this up on the screen, but there are so many competitions for our eyeballs these days that no matter the channel that we choose to promote these activities, we're always going to miss a bunch of people. So, you know, I find one of the best comments we've heard was, last year the sidewalk stickers were a big hit. Where were they this year? They really let people know about it. And I think more and more, if we can keep partnering with our downtown and asking downtown to also then rebroadcast our message, you know, organize the organizers of the downtown restaurant scene and have them repush it out to their customers. That's another way to get more people.
Another way to get people is remind them of listening to, it's usually Mayor Monday, but it's now the Mayor's Men Monday this week with Giovanni Zinn, the city engineer, traffic czar, Doug Houselane on New Haven Independence radio station, WNHH 103.5 FM. Live stream newhavenindependent.org. We're on Facebook Live. And guys, did you share it on Facebook Live?
I believe I have.
I believe I have as well.
Double check.
You know, Harry, we don't have it down as shared. That's why I was asking. Their shares aren't up there. But if you go to New Haven Independent, you go to the video and share it. And we're talking about some news in New Haven with our roads, with our buildings. Giovanni, as of today, people are driving on the Chapel Street Bridge again, right?
Right, yes. So we finished phase one of our improvements on the Chapel Street Bridge.
Now, that bridge has a history. Remember the four suburbanites who drove over it in 1988 or 89 and to their death?
Yep.
And since then, we tried to fix it. It's an old bridge. Why do we keep needing to fix it?
Well, I mean,
this is going into Fairhaven.
The bridge
right,
is, you know, it's coming up on 30 years old here, and it's in an extremely corrosive environment with you know, salt water underneath it, with the, you know, the tidal flushing of the Mill River there. Also, you know, mechanical systems, movable bridges, they tend to wear down. You know, movable bridges generally have a lifespan of 30 years between looking
so
at major overhauls.
When?
Right at the time, I think, around when that
was it
that
built after the accident
happened.
Or before?
I think it was during construction, if I remember correctly, because there was an issue with Jersey
they saw the
barriers.
Sign. So the bridge was out, and they said
yes.
They couldn't see the sign, and question was a Jersey barrier there to block them.
Right.
You know, some people think that's part of the reason Mayor Bentolito, after 10 years in office, decided to retire. It didn't bother him all the black kids were getting killed in New Haven before suburban white kids drove off a bridge. It really, like, hurt him. And it like he said he felt kind of bad about that. It wore on him.
Well, I was obviously far too young at the time to be involved in the politics in New Haven, but I do remember, you know, growing up in the area, that event. You know, actually, there was a teacher in my school at the time who had I think a sibling or something pass away in that crash, and you know, it was a big thing, and it's, you know, stuck in my memory pretty strongly from then, and obviously now it's something that's very germane to my work.
So you have this bridge, it's
right.
30 years old. And bridges need to be replaced after 30 years, but we're not replacing it, are we?
Right. No, I mean, you have to start to really do some heavy, you know, TLC to a bridge about that time, a movable bridge. So what we did was we did a bunch of mechanical and electrical upgrades. Also, there was some corrosion starting to set in. So we were able to, you know, cut out those sections of structural steel and replace them and put in additional steel to reinforce certain areas. And that really kind of brings the bridge back up to a pretty good condition.
So you don't think, if it's a 30-year lifespan, why aren't we just completely replacing it? Can you put Band-Aids on it, and will they last?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, you don't have to replace the bridge necessarily after 30 years, but you do have some major components that start to require a lot. The second phase, which we'll be doing in the spring, is actually...
Next spring.
Next spring, yep. Blast cleaning and painting the entire structure.
Oh, nice.
And the real key there is that you want to stop the corrosion, all right? You want to protect what you have, and it's a proactive as opposed to a reactive step. So everything that we've done so far is pretty reactive to the deteriorating condition of the bridge. Now, you're absolutely right. We don't want to have to replace the bridge in 15, 20 years, all right? You don't want to wait for your section loss in the steel to get to a point where, you know, you have to replace stuff wholesale. And that's where you know, we're using actually $3 million of funds from the state of Connecticut through the LOTSIP, Local Transportation Capital Improvement Program, to blast, clean, and paint the bridge. It is very expensive to paint the bridge.
Remind me again, what's the surface of the bridge that I like so much? I took a bike ride over it on Thursday, and I texted Giovanni right away, like, this is great.
Right, so one of the things that we did...
You are the nerdiest people in New Haven. It's my kind of official. But I am too. Yeah.
So one of the things that we did in phase one was that we had to... The deck of the bridge was starting to deteriorate. The deck is basically a steel grid that was filled with a sort of a polymeric aggregate filling. You know, basically little stones bound together by plastic. And that was starting to fail and come apart. So we had to get use a hydro demolition, basically using a robot with an extremely high pressure water jet to go through and blast out all of this polymeric overlay. And then, you know, once that's completely done, then we were going to put in concrete to fill up the grid of the deck. And then what Doug really likes is the wearing surface that we put over the top. So we put a 5/8 inch layer over the top of a similar product. Again, a small aggregate that's bound together with a polymer. And the thinking there is that is what wears. You know, so in 15, 20 years, you'll have to go back and redo that surface layer as opposed to having to blast out all the concrete in the deck and to start replacing the deck because you've lost too much of the metal in the deck.
Now, Fairhaven is kind of an island. Yeah, because right. It all is water almost Isthmus. Completely around it.
It's a peninsula.
So the way we get over it from the parallel to Chapel Street Bridge is the Grant Avenue Bridge, which you also have done work on. It's not a bridge that we see, right? But it goes over water.
Yes. Well, I mean, to be fair, there's a few Grand Avenue bridges. The main one is obviously over the Quinnipiac.
Right.
There are two little bridges over the mill, which are, you know, fixed in place little bridges that you probably wouldn't pay too much attention to.
And are we talking about Bletchley Avenue and Grand Avenue there over the mill?
It's actually just before James Street.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And just
it's right by, right in front of, on either side of Ball Island, which is where English Station is.
Okay.
So there are two little bridges there.
Oh,
and those
right
are the
on
ones
Grand.
That are is, really
right on Grand.
Yes. Those
and
are the ones that
are. You did work on those a few months ago.
No, those UI's doing work out there on their system. Those were replaced not that long ago. I want to say in the last 20 something years.
There was work at the railroad crossing in the last
right,
few
the railroad
years.
Crossing.
That's
we did
thinking
back. That's
and
what
then
you're thinking
there
of.
Is yep. some work on the Grand Avenue Bridge we're all thinking of, which is the one over on front.
Right. The one on Grand Avenue, you know, over the Quinnipiac is the big one.
That's the biggie.
That is a very big
and
one.
And Ferry Street, too.
Right. And then there's also the Ferry Street Bridge.
That took, how long did that take to replace?
The ferry, again, not having been in the engineering department at the time, I think basically what happened was there was an inspection. The inspection came back saying you have to close the bridge now. So they closed the bridge now, and then they had to find $21 million or whatever it was to fix the bridge. And that's really not a position you ever want to find yourself in, which is why we've been since 2010, you know, working and studying the Grand Avenue Bridge. You know, and obviously this past year in the budget, there was $6.9 million of local bonding towards that. There's also a repurposed federal earmark towards that. And then we're also working hard with our legislative delegation to get the appropriate amount of funding in the state local bridge program to be able to support the project.
And then we got the Tomlinson Bridge, which kind of goes to the annex and then back toward Fairhaven.
Right. And that's a state owned bridge.
Okay. So you don't have to worry about that. And then there's the, and then on Bletchley. What is that? Do we see that as a bridge? Or it goes over railroad tracks?
That's over the railroad, yes.
So coming in from the east, you really don't have to go over water. But you have to go over a bridge. You have to go over railroad tracks.
Right, you have to go over the railroad tracks.
That's why it kind of feels like an island.
Yes.
And it feels like it's Mayor Monday, even though we have Doug Houseley and Giovanni Zinn from the Traffic and Engineering Department in on WNH. He's filling us in a lot of what's going on with government, how it affects our daily life. Is Hurricane Jose... By the way, Giovanni, we still don't see you. Oh, you do have the second Sharon. Giovanni, what about Hurricane Jose? We can't even keep track with all the names. It's hurricane season. We're reading and watching on TV and on social media how in Florida, communities are devastated. St. Martin's 90% devastated. And obviously what happened in Texas, a historic storm that made cities into rivers. Are we in the path of any major storms that you know of as of now?
Well, I actually just pulled up the National Hurricane Center, nhc.noaa.gov, which I've become very good friends with in the last few weeks. Looks like we're at a tropical storm watch in this area. The tropical storm warning is to the east, starting in roughly Rhode Island. It does seem like the most of the effects will be to the east of here on Jose.
When is this?
We're looking... probably Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, somewhere in
that
range.
So around
here,
we're going to have storms here those days.
We're not going to have, I don't believe we'll have a tropical storm. There's a possibility of having a tropical storm type of event at that point. I mean, it'll be windy and that sort of thing. The latest forecast I saw on storm surge is up to a couple feet, which is, you know, significant, but not in the realm of where we would expect to have a major coastal flood.
So what's
flooding.
Likely to happen next few days? Just a regular rainstorm?
It's probably some rain, some wind, you know, and some higher than at the normal high tide conditions.
In general, how has your two jobs changed with climate change? Now, Doug, since Giovanni, you'll remember this, since Governor Malloy has become governor, 2010, his first term, he had four huge megastorms that were like the kind that other governors would have at most once. In 4 or 8 years. And every year we have these major storms. How has this changed what you do?
Well, I think for us, it's really redoubled our efforts. And again, in communications, you know, it comes back to government is about life safety and health. For us, it's really been about how do we better communicate on the winter events, you know, specifically speaking. I know when the mayor first took over in 2014, there was already snow on the ground on her first day. And snow used to melt in New England.
And you guys had that first winter, you had some stumbles, and then you spent a lot of time, including in the summer months, figuring out how to do storms better. And I think everyone agreed that we really stepped up the game. I'm just wondering if there's a new focus for people in government. If you're a city or state official, and now federal too, you're partly going to be superstorm managers.
Well, I think there's no question that, certainly in the design of infrastructure and how we manage our infrastructure, climate change is a huge, huge deal. You know, certainly looking at all of the stormwater issues that we have around the city, especially the downtown storm sewer shed. We're a low-lying coastal city, all right? Stormwater, our city drains by gravity. All of the pipes are pitched in a way to get down to the water. As that water rises, the capacity of those pipes goes down. You know, we've been doing a lot of storm prep exercises in the last few weeks, and Friday morning we had a big meeting with the mayor and, you know, a lot of the top staff of the city to talk about storm prep, you know, just in case something were to come this week. When you're looking at, you know, storm surges in the 4 to 5 foot range, you know, you start to look at areas of the city that are basically at the same level as the storm surge. And even if for various topographic reasons, they're protected from flooding at that point, you still have a problem where you can't get stormwater out. So, for example, you get, not even anything close to what, you know, Houston saw, but, you know, you get 7, 8, 10 inches of rain and a storm surge that doesn't allow you to drain the city. That is a very significant problem, and that water is going to go somewhere.
We see it a lot on Union Avenue, and there's been a lot of conversation around the Long Wharf Drive area with respect to drainage. And every storm, there's a watch on the team. Somebody's going out, be it Union Station folks, city folks, either going out to check all of our low points in the city. Flooding.
What happened last Friday? What kind of meeting was it, and where was it? Was it in the Emergency Operations Center below 200 Orange?
Well, we had in a conference room on the second floor, but it was basically, you know, a lot of the top staff of the city going through the operational departments and some of the technical departments sat down and basically went through exactly all of what we do in storms as a refresher for everybody. Also get a, you know, just keep everything nice and fresh in our mind going into this week. Also, we talked about some of the new tools that we're using to analyze threats in the city.
And what are those?
Well, one of the things that we did is actually the state of Connecticut flew the entire state in the last year or so with an airplane that, you know, they took very accurate imagery. Also, it had LIDAR, so they basically shot a laser down, you know, every few inches and hit every point on the ground. And so we have very accurate topographic data. Alfredo Herrera...
What do you do with that?
Well, Alfredo Herrera is our new GIS guru here at the city. He's really fantastic. And what we're able to do is he created a tool that off of all of this data, basically you type in a predicted storm surge and it gives you a custom inundation map. So it shows you exactly what areas are vulnerable to water at different levels. So, you know, traditionally you would have static maps where, you know, There's a map that FEMA gives, you know, every city that says this is what happens in a Category 1 hurricane, this is what happens in a Category 2 hurricane. Now, not all Category 1 hurricanes have the same storm surge, all right? And that's where, you know, usually you get a range. You know, it's either, you know, 4 to 5 feet, 5.5 to 6.5, whatever. And so this tool allows us to create very accurate inundation maps of what we expect to happen, both at 5.5 feet, say, and 6.5 feet. There are certain points, you know, it's the quantity of damage that you get out of storm surge is not linear to as the storm surge rises. For example, if you look at Superstorm Sandy, high tide was about 2 hours after the peak of the storm surge. If those two had coincided, we would have had another foot or two of water and we would have had a lot more inundation in the city. So it's really using GIS and some of these other things is really key to getting a very custom analysis, storm per storm.
So is a new position you got in the budget?
No, it's the same one. It just had, you know, the previous person left and gotcha. He's here.
And so that's what else did you discuss at this meeting about what you're going to be doing?
One of the other things, sort of the new wrinkles that, that I'm kind of involved in, is we're looking at temporary storm barriers in various key locations around the city. Some of the obvious ones are the two underpasses under the highway on Long Wharf Drive. You know, the whole area that was built up, you know, as part of the highway between the highway and the rail yard. It's all very low lying. It's all in the 100-year floodplain. And by blocking off those two underpasses, there's an opportunity to prevent floodwaters from getting back there.
So that means traffic won't be able to go under the highway.
Correct.
Would you be able to go on Long Wharf Drive?
Yeah. You would be, I mean, you'd probably
be. It'd be a dead end. It would be a dead end at that point. You could get on the highway north.
And get on the highway north.
You could go up east.
So it actually is very unique in a sense that you actually won't be affecting traffic that much. You know, Sargent Drive is still open. Long Wharf Drive is kind of a dead end.
The only person who loses if you're coming out of Jordan's and you wanted to, for some reason, go on to
95 North.
Yeah, on 95 North, you'd have to get it somewhere else. But that's probably going to be flooded anyway in that kind of storm.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you're probably, we wouldn't do that in sort of a, like the what Jose is showing right now, we wouldn't try to block that off.
What other places are you going to block?
There's a couple of spots near some of our tide gates that the water could potentially short circuit. There's a little low-lying area of Cart Road.
Which road?
Cart Road.
C-A-R-T?
Yep.
Okay, I didn't know where that
was. Never heard of that road, I'm sure. It's by the Morris Creek tide gates, where the water can sort of sneak around the side. You know, then there's a couple other little spots like that. One of the other things is the in downtown Westville, obviously, when we get a very rain-dominated event, you know, I guess it was 1980 or so, there was a large flood.
1982?
82, yes.
It was a river. It was like Houston.
So for a very obvious reason, I don't remember that. But
but we've done work on the West River there. So
Pond Lily is no longer a pond. Right.
Right. Well, and what's important there is that, you know, you do have the flood works there. And there are actually, you know, once we're starting to get into that, you know, 6, 7, 8 inches of rain over a day or two, you know, we have to put out temporary protection measures across Blake Street. So basically, you have to close off Blake Street in two spots, you know, on either side of the bridge there over the West River, and the water's expected to go over the top.
So you'll be able to get onto Blake in Westville Village and get to the apartments and to Springside Avenue, but not further.
I think they're on the other side of the bridge. Springside Avenue is on the other side.
But you'll be able to
you'll
be able to make one left before around the park before you get to the bridge. I believe to West
probably. I have to check exactly where we would have to do
Southern,
it.
Southern, you're going to have to get in that long line on Fitch Street if you want to get back onto Whaley. You won't be able to go.
Well, I mean, you would only block these off when you know the river's about to flood.
Yeah.
I mean, this is you're not.
The
you don't want anyone going
to
the
river, right?
Yeah. And actually, one of the things that we did is that it was previously you had to use sandbags, and what we've done is actually gone to what are called bulk bags. We just bought 130 of these, and these are basically bags that are 3 feet by 3 feet by 3 feet, so it's a cubic yard. You know, you fill them with soil, with sand, and you know, they weigh just under about 4,000 pounds, and they've got four lifting straps that you can lift them up with a forklift. And
well, that sounds fun.
They look identical to the storage bulk waste that you can hire. You know, where they drop off that bag on your yard.
Yeah,
looks very similar to that.
And what's good about that is that each one's worth about 50 sandbags, so they're a lot faster to deploy.
So what do those bags do?
They're basically for, you know, the same thing you'd use them for sandbags, is to create temporary barrier structures to prevent floodwaters from either getting through, or in the case of the West River floodworks, it's sort of to channelize the flow so it doesn't, you know,
now
go
everywhere.
Now,
you guys have been involved in a years-long project that I believe is federally funded to mitigate flooding in New Haven. We found that we have a lot of flooding. Some of the worst places were around Union Station, if I'm not mistaken. Then flash flood rainstorms, those become unpassable, and that's pretty important by a train station. How much money is that over how many years? What is the source of that money, and what are we doing on that?
Well, we had a first pass at it with CDBG-DR, which is Community Development Block Grant Disaster Relief Funding. That was about $500,000. Basically, what we did in that was that we created a mathematical model of the stormwater system of downtown. So it's about a 600-acre storm sewer shed. Now we've done a lot of sort of analysis of that model, looked at various different alternatives. You know, you're fighting gravity, so none of the alternatives are particularly good. But we now have an additional $4 million of CDBGDR funding. $2.5 million of that is going towards implementing green infrastructure in downtown. You know, the concept there is to use these, you know, roadside rain gardens to get water out of our storm system.
What's the other word for that again?
Bioswales.
We are doing bioswales. Yeah. So we're putting more bioswales downtown.
Right. So that's one part of it. The second part of it is doing more, refining the mathematical model that we have and also doing design work around some solutions. We've been sitting down with the Connecticut Department of Transportation, figuring out how we can route any necessary piping across the rail yard, which is a nightmare in its own right. You know, and looking at various other little things, other things that we can do. You know, it's we often are tempted to think of this as one big problem, and really, it's probably the compilation of 20 problems.
Haven't we done our whole citywide map for coastal flooding zones?
Oh yeah, yeah.
So yep, tell me about that. What is that map, and what did we do?
Well, there's obviously FEMA has the, you know, the 100-year floodplain. So there's the FEMA maps that, you know, govern what you're doing on, you know, often for flood insurance and stuff like that. The inundation maps that we were just talking about, you know, we now have the capability of doing very custom storm-based maps that show inundation and flooding as well.
So more specific to each storm, we're going to know which part of the city might flood.
Correct.
And yes. Evacuate if necessary.
Yeah. So we actually started it the first time. I think it was last winter. We had a nor'easter that, you know, it wasn't that much of a flood, but it was, you know, somewhere around elevation 5 to 6 that we had water up to. Normal high tides roughly around 3.5. That, you know, very accurately predicted the spots that normally flood, you know, near Petrillo's Auto on Middletown Avenue flooded. You know, we got close at City Point. You know, we had I think Hemingway Creek flooded a little bit, and that was not a rain event. It was a coastal storm surge event. And that's what we, you know, we were able to, and it worked very well. It predicted it very accurately, and we're very excited about that.
All right. And I'm excited to remind you that you listen to
Dateline New Haven here on 103.5 FM WNHH Radio.
Live streamed at
newhavenindependent.org on Facebook Live.
Today's guests are
Giovanni Zinn and Doug Haslett.
Who are they?
They are the city engineer and the director of transportation, traffic, and parking.
And don't forget Paul Bass, the editor-in-chief and czar of news for New Haven.
I wanted to ask you something, Doug, about bicycling. So first of all, we've got the bicycling, got the car-free challenge. September, I love when you guys do this every year. You have all these like small and larger businesses and individuals compete for who can find the most alternatives to get to work for a month without driving.
That's right.
You know, we felt we cheated the first year because all our people already were on bikes. So we won the first year, so we stopped competing.
But doesn't mean you should stop using NewRide, NURIDE. It's an app on your phone or on the web that you can log your trips and you can get free rewards for your
commute. I never wanted any of the prizes.
Really?
Yeah, I had all those prizes, they weren't anything I wanted. But I don't care. My reward is that not driving to work makes me feel absolutely great and connected to my city.
I felt pretty great riding in this morning.
Yeah. So anyway, so you do this every month.
Yeah, every year.
And you have some great statistic every year of how much carbon dioxide you prevent going into the atmosphere.
We track a couple of things, and they all come back to carbon dioxide. Miles saved, commutes avoided, and then carbon dioxide. I think we were over 1,250,000, if I remember the statistic, metric tons, 260,000 metric tons or something.
It's also kind of fun. Everything about transportation to me about alternative transportation is fun. Like, it's really fun to have how you get around, connect you with other people on the bus. I mean, I have my complaints about the state bus system, but it's really fun to think about just walking around New Haven. It's so fun bumping into people. I find biking a little hard now because of how dangerous it kind of gets with the drivers. But when you're feeling good on a bike, you're really seeing the city up close and away and getting around without having to park your car and have frustrations.
I'll tell you, seeing the city at 30 miles an hour is a lot different than seeing at 7 miles an hour or 3 miles an hour. You know, the difference between your bike, your bus, and your walking commute. Even the bus commute, you have the opportunity to just look out the side window,
yeah,
as opposed to your front windshield's a big deal. You know, one of the arguments against one-way streets is that as drivers approach intersections, they only see two angles of the street. And so you know, if you're approaching the street corner, you're not going to see five guys. You will see the new CVS or whatever it is and the other intersection of Church Street, but you're not going to see the five guys behind you. So, you know, it's an opportunity when you're not driving to look outside the window to see what's around you, or if you're riding your bike to see things at 7 miles an hour.
And of course, to feel good. I mean, you feel so much better when you've walked to work, bike to work, than if you drive to work.
I'm not ashamed to say it. I've lost about 15 pounds this year. I'm just redoubling my efforts to bike into work. And
I don't like what happens to me psychologically when I drive. You're automatically worrying about like getting ahead of somebody else or getting to that light before it changes, frustrated. And I'm not frustrated the same way walking and biking, even though it takes longer. I'm actually quite sure why that is.
Well, you're in control of your destiny on some level. I mean, if you got a flat tire on your bike, you're going to be upset. You know, and I do love my commute, and I do love thinking about my commute. But a lot of people out there don't like their commute, and I just want to recognize, you know, how painful and frustrating it can be just to try and get to work, just to get to the grocery store, just to drop your kids off at the daycare.
Well, that is a little bit of a first world problem.
And it's
malaria
know.
Is a little different, right?
Yeah, no, it's a separation, and you know, it used to be, I would say, you know, 50 years ago, segregation or discrimination on buses was, you know, where you sat on the bus. Now it's, you know, where does your bus go and how far can you get?
And we're going to get to that in a minute. Tell me about the competition this week, month.
So we're in the third week.
How many people are signed up?
I will get you some better data on that. We'll be able to tweet it out and push it out to your social media and comment on this. We have our Parklet design competition is in full flare right now. So if folks want to submit an idea for a parklet is a public space in the right of way, just like the terraces are private spaces that are managed by the restaurants. Parklets will be a public space and amenities for folks just to be able to sit or...
Is that like outside Tickaway on Orange Street where they have the tables?
Think of that, but double
Instead
it in
of
size.
A parking space, yeah. It's tables.
That's right.
Kinda nice.
That's right. And so we're hosting a design competition. We've gotten a lot of interest from the architecture school, which has been great. Hoping to engage the design community a little bit more. Those submissions are due tomorrow at 5 p.m. Make Haven Tuesday night. We're going to be doing at the open house. Ahead of time, we're going to have some wine and beer, and we're going to start judging the submissions from the Parklet design competition. And
what time does that start?
5:30 is when the Parklet thing. We haven't gotten any submissions yet, so we're anticipating about 3 or 4 in the next 24 hours from the people that have been asking questions and whatnot. So if you are listening and you haven't pressed send on your submission, there's $3,000 from Go New Haven Go and the New Haven in the Green Fund out there for you to design a parklet and put it in the street.
And then, so are there hundreds of people in New Haven this month who are keeping track of how they commute and trying to get to work a different way?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, if your employer is signed up, then you're in there. If you can sign up as an individual as well. And we track, everyone downloads the New Ride app or voluntarily puts their information on newride.com. It's a service provided by the Connecticut DOT and through the CT Rides program. It's a way to pair up people in their commutes. So if you wanted to find a walking buddy or a bus buddy or even a commuting buddy in a car, like if you wanted to be a passenger.
This is one of the great things. I love what a alternative transportation city it is, and I just think you do a great job with this program. You also do this thing in October, Walktober.
Yeah,
what is Walktober?
You know, it's a little vague. I chuckle because I don't know how many events we've had in Walktober, but it's a chance for us to really promote walking. You know, to be a good transit city and to be a good quality, high quality of life city, you have to be a walkable city. You know, I think back to, was it Frank Rice, I think it was, the sidewalk mayor of New Haven.
Sidewalk mayor, early 1900s, right?
The sidewalk mayor of New Haven.
And in Doug Ray's book, New Haven, Urbanism, It's End, he holds that up as sort of the counterpoint to the ambitious urban renewal mayor.
Right.
He doesn't take a side of either one, but one vision of mayor is that you're just making the infrastructure work. Basically, Giovanni and Doug are really what government should do, which is to make sure stuff doesn't flood, buildings don't fall down, that you can walk and bike and drive easily versus the other idea. And it's not an either or.
No,
the other idea
not.
Is that government is there to sort of make structural change and bring justice.
Well, I really do think, you know, we look every time I find a street in New Haven without a sidewalk, you know, I think how long will it take to get a sidewalk there? You know, it's
right.
Really a binary equation. Is there an adequate sidewalk that folks that are ADA can, you know, we had this at the debate.
Yeah.
This is a real thing. We have the
well,
Pittsburgh.
Well, it's tough for handicap because I even noticed recently some curb cuts for handicap.
Yeah.
The road seems to wear, so you're no longer, it's no longer really a curb cut. So you kind of have
to. Yeah, and that's something that we do try to chase down a lot. You know, there's a handful of spots where, you know, you don't have the ramps even.
Right.
You know,
right.
I think one of the most important things is in engineering when you look at it is problem definition. You know, the urban renewal people, you know, ask the question, how can we get cars in and out? How do we make our, you know, the movement of cars very well? You know, I think what we've been challenged by the mayor and the community is how do we create infrastructure that creates community? And that's where I think walking and biking is so very
and
vital.
So what happens in Walktober?
Walktober, I'll tell you next week. I don't know if we've come up with a plan in Walktober for this year.
But isn't this
in
a game where everyone signs up, I'm going to walk on my commute, and then you get prizes and that kind of thing, and you have people encouraging people to walk?
This year we're going to be focusing on tours and experiencing your neighborhood or experiencing another neighborhood.
So it's not as much a commuting thing?
Not as much for commuting, but we have seen the Walk New Haven folks. There's the group out of Southern Connecticut State University's, their cultural center, give me a moment back. I know Aaron Good is on their board, and they have four different brochures for walking tours of historical.
Oh, you're talking about the Ethnic Historical Society, Heritage Society. They've done some great walking tours. Amazing of Dixwell and down two parts of downtown, Worcester Square. They're going to be more. And when you go there, there's a QR code. You get your phone and you hear voices of people from those buildings. I love those booklets.
This Walktober, we're really going to be promoting all the walking tours. You also have, you know, Yale University is a huge asset, and they have a lot of free tours for public every day. You also have
I like walking as commuting. That's become, in the last 2 years, it's become my principal way of commuting. And I absolutely love it. You know, walking 2.5 miles each day to and from work, I really feel connected to my city. You run into people. You know, I'm getting a little older, so the biking sometimes. I mean, some days I bike. I really like the bus, but the bus is still very inconvenient for commuting in New Haven. And, Doug, you've been working on that. You're part of a task force. You got money a bunch of years ago to do a study. Part of the issue, you did succeed in getting the state to finally put GPS in the buses so we can know in real time where the bus is. But most people still don't know that exists, and I've been told by people who use it, it's not very good. What's your take on it?
I took the Z back home the other day, last Wednesday, I think it was, and I do bike a lot because I only live within 1.7 miles. But I took the Z home the other day, and the transit app was, not as helpful as I was anticipating.
Why was that?
And I get this tweet a lot from some customers. They're still off by a few minutes. I'm not sure what calibration settings are required on the back end of CT Transit and Trapeze, the software that they're using. I know that they have the folks at CT Transit have expressed and DOT have expressed that they still have some tweaking and some improvements to do on the software. Not sure what that means or what that is. However,
it took them years to do it. And then after you finally got them to do it, they did Hartford first and us years later. And then before it came out, every week almost, I was contacting DOT. When you come out with it, let's do a big story. Let's let people know it's there. They never got back to me. And months later, people still don't know it's even there. But you're saying it doesn't matter because it doesn't really work.
I say it's a great investment and it's a good management tool. There's also the customer facing portion.
Does it work?
You know, it didn't help me on my trip.
So after all this money and all this time, it still doesn't work.
It seems like the buses are starting. You know, I've gotten some great reports from
okay, you got to get along with these people.
Right,
but what about the study you're doing about the other big issue was where the routes are and what time? So people can't really go to a job in North Haven, especially if they don't work 9 to 4.
Right.
And you can't go from the Hill or from West Haven to North Haven or to Milford Mall from, you know, for a job from Dixon. I know you're working on a lot of this stuff.
Right.
Where are you on that?
We are at the tail end. It's a two-phase study, the $1 million that was about $1 million that was allocated. It was kicked off. We're about a year into it now, after a false start a year prior. So we're a year into phase one. Phase one report is finalized. The next public meeting is November the 1st. We should be releasing phase one in sort of a drafted form for the community.
So how are you going to suggest redoing the bikes, the bus routes?
Well, so far the phase one was all of a data gathering to figure out. One of the most important things we all figured out around the table was that, customers felt it every day. There was no on-time performance data for the CT Transit New Haven system. It's something that really speaks to where we need to invest again into the ITS, the intelligent transportation systems, into the GPS technology.
I mean, just finding out how often they come on time.
Yeah.
But I thought a part of it was where people go, that the routes were based on most people working in factories that you can get from a New Haven neighborhood to downtown and
absolutely.
The hub and spoke no longer works.
Absolutely. And
what
so
are you looking at that?
We are looking in phase two, we're going to be developing improvement recommendations for what we've looked at through phase one, which is the B and the D line carry 40% of our traffic in the entire system.
And that's like Fairhaven, Dixwell.
Yeah, it's the Whaley, Grand Avenue, Dixwell, and Congress lines, effectively, are the vast majority of our system is running on those two or four, depending on if you split them up, you know, B north, B south. But so we're going to be looking at improvements to those two main lines.
But I would argue those are the ones that run the most.
That
like
is true.
D goes every 10 minutes.
That's right.
But how about the Q? In my neighborhood, there are people who are commuters by choice, and so many of them would take the bus. if it went past 5:30 in any regional schedule, if it went past 7:30 at all, if on the weekends it came more than once an hour or once every 2 hours, is any of that under consideration?
Definitely. I think what is being, without being too, put a too positive spin on this, because we do have to come back to the overarching conversation, which is the state budget and how do we fund investments that are important, like investments in transit and operations in transit. But the, you know, if you can improve, and there are efficiencies to be gained in the B and the D still, even with its great capacity and its throughput. So if we can improve the B and the D lines, we can spread those savings to other portions or have additional buses, because you, as you've seen in the D line, you know, it's standing room only for a lot of the runs. So if we can get more efficiencies out of their systems as they work now, we can then spread those efficiencies.
The positives are the buses are really nice.
I'll tell you, the new ones
are very nice to ride. Yeah, and even the second generation, like the second of the new ones, and the bus drivers are really nice.
And definitely I'm not jealous of anyone who has to effectively do this all day. You know, it's not a pleasant drive out there from time to time, as you mentioned in your drive. A lot of drivers are kind of fairly rude. Not the bus drivers, like the other drivers that they have to deal with every day.
Right.
You know, so they have to deal with a lot of variations. And, you know, one of the things that we're trying to solve together as a downtown community, this is really, seems really silly, but where do bus drivers go to the bathroom at night?
No, I've talked to bus drivers about that. Yeah. Not just downtown. They told me, a woman I felt so bad for, and sometimes, you know, in Amity, they try to run in.
It's a real problem. Like, we don't have, I don't necessarily know, you know, I'm trying to link CT Transit up with people to talk and whatnot. But there, you know, there needs to be some effort around just the holistic solution of transit. I've got some new neighbors who moved in. Both of them are cycle commuters, bike commuters who just moved here from Portland, Oregon in the last year. So they were initially at a flop place, you know, temporarily. They found permanent residence, you know, after 6 months of sort of a flex space. But their number one complaint, you know, we're just talking on Saturday or Sunday, was, you know, the bus system need, you know, there is a lot of effort. We spend about $41 million a year in the CT Transit New Haven system. You know, we have a lot of passengers, 10 million a year. We're doing a good job. We can definitely do more. And so we're looking at the same model that Baltimore did. We're looking at the same model that Houston's done. All of them have a spine through their center city. Pittsburgh has done this as well. A way to get buses through their center downtown in a faster way. So for us, the one-way street grid is really impacting the way that buses just literally move around the green. And how do they get from one bus stop to the next and connect from the M line to the F, you know, and that whole one-way grid really creates six more traffic lights per bus per morning and evening commute that we really want to look at and how to get through the downtown more efficiently.
Doug Houseley and Giovanni Zinn, you know, I love talking to you guys. I honestly, when I look at the list I wished we had talked about today, I think I could have talked to you for 3 hours. Like,
rapid fire. Should we do rapid fire?
Let's do rapid fire lightning round. You're one step ahead of me. Okay, Doug, how are we doing on the cycle track on the west side of town from Forest Road to Park Street?
We are milling and paving right now. All of the approvals have been received except for some final approvals from OSTA.
What's OSTA?
The Office of State Traffic Administration. We're doing some commenting back and forth, but we're clearing the final hurdles.
When's it going to be constructed?
Giovanni, that is this spring.
We're doing
milling and paving now.
Milling and paving now, and we'll be in earnest in the spring.
In the spring. How did those one-way against traffic bike lanes work out, like on High Street? Are those working?
High Street's working out great. We have the two bike signals and contraflow lanes. We just had...
Contraflow, that's what it is.
Contraflow lane. Just had some folks come up from Providence, Cambridge, Burlington, Stamford, New London area. Just came for a conference Thursday, Friday, and they love them. You know, one of the struggles that we have is doing more. So things like Wall Street could probably be ready for it. Things like Court Street and Crown Street could be ready for it.
So that's coming next.
What's up?
Giovanni, Brewery Street Seawall, where are we on that?
Oh, pretty much complete. I think we are complete. Last thing to do is we're doing a little breakout project with the Parks Department to get all the lights in the area back up. We have to refeed the lights.
How are we doing with the Q House? That got delayed because the architect died and we didn't have access to the plans.
Yep,
and we discovered a problem.
We're looking to be in construction in spring of 18.
Spring of 18. The Armory on Gough Street, what's happening with that?
Again, we're possibly this fall or spring we'll be doing some roof replacements. We're doing a code analysis of the building, and also we're doing along with LCI and a bunch of other departments.
What's the latest of what you want to have happen there? We have a lot of empty space. We talked about moving the Board of Ed there. We talked about a culinary business development program. Are those going to happen?
I think those are all on the table. Again, the code analysis, once we get that back, will really give us a good sense.
We're building a new firing range. What's going on with that?
Fire range is going great. Actually, we got the foundation done. We're getting deliveries on all of the actual range itself. We're probably going to start erecting steel on Monday for this range structure.
Oh, wow.
And we got it. It's
next
looking,
Monday.
Yeah, this coming Monday. Yeah, most
right.
likely.
New ice rink. Is there going to be skating this winter? And when's that ice
rink? Unfortunately,
be
there won't be skating this winter. We actually had an issue where we found PCBs and asbestos in the slip sheet under the existing ice floor. So
on Ralph Walker?
And Ralph Walker. Yeah, they put a very high quality slip sheet in the late 60s under there and back
slip
then.
Slip sheet.
Yeah, basically what it is like almost a tar paper that's between the ice floor and the ground so that when the ice floor expands and contracts, it doesn't grab the ground and crack.
Huh, so what's that mean? What's going to happen?
We have to cut it out and remediate it, which takes a little extra time, and that's what's kind of slipped
our schedule.
Well,
you weren't originally going to have it this winter anyway, right?
Well, there was an outside chance we were going to have, you know, very late winter, you know, skating, but this environmental issue has kind of put a nice hole in that. So we're
okay.
Looking at the next season.
And then firing range.
Oh, we just talked about the fire.
Oh, I'm sorry. We talked about everything. See, I can't keep up those things. Giovanni's in, city engineer, Doug Houseleiting, traffic chief of New Haven. You guys just do so much great work, and thanks so much for coming on Dateline New Haven today to update us. Keep going, guys.
Nope. Thank you very much.
We'll keep pedaling, and Paul.
We didn't even get to it all.
Happy holidays this week, and for you and your family,
you.
And to everyone celebrating.
Absolutely.
See, that's why it is still Mayor Monday, because it's the political side. No, thank you very much. Looking
You're
forward
welcome.
To the new year very much. And thank you for joining us on Dateline Haven today with Giovanni and Doug, two people we love to have, especially when they run their own show here. Thanks to Bertram Moses, PC, and Gateway Community College for providing financial support. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free. From the CD Plea for Peace, this is Paul Bass reminding us all that we do know what it feels like to be free. We just have to book our flight. Book your flight and fly free with us all day and all night long here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.